Welcome to Jersey Guy Sports, your sports talk home for the Yanks, the Giants, the Rangers, and the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, and I'm your host, Don. I want to thank you for listening. Now, today I'm going to be discussing Rutgers basketball, who lost to what I think is a really great Illinois team on Saturday at the Rack, 76-58. As well, I'm going to be talking about the New York Rangers, who came back and beat Nashville 4-3 Saturday afternoon, actually, in Music City. Let's go ahead and get started. So I'm going to get started with Rutgers basketball. Rutgers was demolished by Illinois Saturday afternoon at the Rack. It was 76-58 and really one of the worst games at the Rack that I can remember in recent years for Rutgers. They were clearly outplayed by what is, in my mind, a clearly better Illinois team. Illinois was better offensively, defensively, and all over the court. Probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I went to the Rack and watched Rutgers get dismantled by Maryland at home. This was before we kind of rose up and really started to, you know, play really well at the Rack. And this game didn't quite remind me of that one, but I cannot remember a recent game at home where Rutgers looked as bad and was as dominated by the other team as they were by Illinois on Saturday afternoon against Illinois. Rutgers started the game terribly, going down 18-2 in the beginning of the game, and they really never recovered. Despite making kind of a late first half run, Illinois really looked every bit the ranked team they are, and we certainly did not look like we were in the same ballpark as them. And I have to say, it's a little disconcerting for Rutgers fans to see this, because Rutgers had been quite dominant at home. Going back to the end of last season, I read that this is Rutgers' fourth consecutive home loss, which is astounding in the Big Ten, by the way. Fourth consecutive home Big Ten loss, which is amazing. So we lost this first one this year and the last three last year. Prior to that, Rutgers against Big Ten at the Rack had been 21-4 over our last 25 home games against the Big Ten. Now, that is saying something, right? Because the Big Ten, let's face it, you got Illinois, you got Purdue, you got Iowa, you know, Michigan's good. We got a bunch of other teams, 21-4 over the 25 games prior to this streak. And now we've actually lost four consecutive Big Ten home games, which is not great. Not great. The Rack is a very tough place to play, but we have not been making it so over, you know, the end of last year and now the beginning of this year. So this is a little bit concerning. Illinois was dominant defensively. We had so much trouble creating space and making shots. We didn't help ourselves out a lot, but Illinois essentially out-Rutgers, right? This is what we do to other teams generally, right? We shut them down, we trap them, we make them look very tough in the half court. I can see how frustrating now it must be for other teams, because that's how it looked for us. They were spectacular defensively. They out-hustled us. They were faster than us. Their guards are bigger than us, and that presented a really big problem. And that is a change this year, and that is something that before the year we've had to contend with. We lost some big guards in Mulcahy and McConnell, and now we're trying to cover people with shorter guards like Noah Fernandez and Derek Simpson and some others. And while they may be slightly quicker, it does create a problem with height. And essentially, Illinois looked better all over the court, up and down, compared to Rutgers. And again, like I said, what Illinois did defensively is what Rutgers normally does to opponents. So we'll have to see what this year's team has in them for Rutgers. Can we get back to that dominant defensive team? Because we certainly don't look like we have the offensive prowess to outshoot teams, even though that seemed to be our style that we tried early in the year. Oh, we're going to get a bunch of fast break points. We're going to do this. We're going to play fast. Well, you have to actually hit shots. And believe it or not, you have to actually play good defense to do that. Because if you don't get takeaways or come out of the gate running, you're not going to be able to, after a made bucket, just kind of race up the floor every time. It's just not going to happen. So some of that quick play has to come from good defense, and there was not enough of that yesterday. And a lot of that had to do also with Illinois just frankly being the better team. They have some stars on that team, and let me tell you, it showed on the court for sure. It definitely showed on the court. They have a guy named Shannon on Illinois who was just friggin' tremendous, looked like a superstar all night, and Rutgers had no answer. And they moved the ball really well, too. Illinois, I'm telling you, they looked every bit the really good team that they are. And this looks like a different Illinois team than some previous teams. We'll see how far they go and how good they are, but they looked really, really good. And Rutgers certainly didn't help them out at all. Illinois looked tremendous in the half court. They had all kinds of movement. They had clutch shooting. They looked like a different team, honestly. It's just really long that I can – a long time since I can remember Rutgers getting this dominated at home. Rutgers shot only 25% from the two-point land. Imagine that. I'm not talking about threes yet, right? Two-point land, 25%. Every four shots I take from two-point land, that includes dunks, layups, everything else, mid-range, I hit one of four. I mean, come on. That is atrocious. Again, a lot has to do with Illinois' defense. Some of it was not. We missed plenty of open shots as well. Besides the shooting, again, two of Rutgers' worst problems, consistent problems, crept up again. Say it with me. Rebounding and free throws. Fucking free throws. Again, what is it with RU, by the way, in rebounds this year? They have to fix this rebounding. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it's tough to look at. Where's the stats I have here? Goodness gracious. We got out-rebounded 49-23. Can you imagine that? They got 26 more rebounds in the rack than we did. It's just demoralizing, and it will absolutely cause you to lose games. What's some other stats here? We shot 20 of 60 from the field. So we missed 40 fucking shots at home. 20 of 60, 33%. You know, it's just not good enough. We only had 9 assists, which is never a good thing. It's never. That means that, you know, you're not moving around enough and passing the ball enough quickly enough so that someone can hit a shot off a pass. The rebounds are just astounding. It's unbelievable. It's just, I can't even tell you how ridiculous that is. We just got dominated inside and out, and they're a better team. But Rutgers has to, losing to this team is not anything to hang our heads about. Losing to this team by as much as we did, like we did, is something we need to hang our heads about and something that we need to improve. A couple of the Rutgers players, Amorui, was terrible. Amorui was terrible. He missed two dunks. He missed a few layups. He was terrible. He was. What are you going to say? He was just awful. He ended up with like 7 points. Really, really bad. Amorui is our star, and he laid a huge, huge egg. Also, Andre Hyatt. I got to tell you guys, again, Hyatt did nothing. I am not an Andre Hyatt fan. He's had a couple good games, especially against some of these lower-level teams we played. I am not a Hyatt fan. I've never been a Hyatt fan, and I've been spouting it for 2 years now, ever since he joined RU. Hyatt is good intermittently, but most of the time in big games, he's not. He's too inconsistent, and here again, he laid a giant egg. He didn't do anything, nothing whatsoever. And there's too many games like we saw Hyatt have Saturday against Illinois. Jamichael Davis looked terrible again. He had one good game last game, and now he looks terrible again. He needs to stop shooting. Hey, J. Mike, stop shooting the basketball. You're supposed to be a point guard. Drive and dish. Stop shooting. He's a terrible shooter, and he should stop shooting. He also, again, cannot make friggin' free throws like the rest of the team. Simpson didn't do anything to help the team win. He's been coming on the last couple games completely absent. Absolutely nothing. Gavin Griffiths actually did fine. But, you know, the team needs to get him the ball more. I think the key is this. We can say this at this point. We've had 5-6 games now. What is Rutgers? 5-2. 7 games at this point. We can say Gavin Griffiths is going to be the guy. I can tell you right now, he's going to be good. I've seen enough of him to know, A, he should be starting. When the tip-off happens in the beginning of the game, Gavin Griffiths needs to be out there. That's number one. I had enough of him coming off the bench. Get him in the fucking game. Let him play a lot of minutes. Get him in the game. That's number one. Number two, we need to start running the ball through Gavin Griffiths. Instead of running all the plays through Cliff or having Hyatt shoot wild threes, it's time to run plays through Gavin Griffiths in the half-court set. He's got the most skill. He's probably our best shooter. He can drive in addition to that. It's time to start running this offense through Gavin Griffiths because – against good teams, as we can see, like Illinois, we have no luck doing anything else. It's time to start Griffiths, and it's time to get him more minutes. Right now, Rutgers backcourt, I'm trying to find the stat. It shot 6 of 23 from the floor, 26% from the floor, our backcourt. Our guards have to be better. You have to be better than that. You cannot be that terrible shooting. Where's the box score? Hyatt, again, 3 of 11 fucking shooting. And some of the good stats that I like, there's a plus minus, meaning that how did your team do when you were on the floor? Minus 20 with Hyatt. Same with Emery. In other words, when Hyatt and Emery were in the game, we got outscored by 20, right? Outscored by 20 when each of them were on the floor. I mean, we only lost by, what, 18. So when they weren't in the game, we were actually beating the other team by 2. Again, that's not, you can't extrapolate. That's, you know, correlation, not causation. But still, it shows how badly the team did when Hyatt was in the game. And Emery this game too, who shot 3 of 10. Now, Wolfolk did okay, but he fouled out again. He has got to get his fouls in order. Got to get his fouls in order. He at least shot 3 of 6, did a few things. But again, he missed some free throws like everyone else with the fucking free throws. I don't understand. 1 of 3 on free throws. And the problem is these stats are even worse than they come out. Because if you miss the front end of a 1-1, it could be like missing 2 shots. Right? I mean, you can't mark it that way, but let's face it, you missed the front end of the 1-1, you don't get the second shot. So that what could have been 2 points ends up being 0 points. So essentially, you're 0 for 2. I mean, it's just a lot of these are the front end of 1-1s, and it certainly doesn't help when you're trying to come back from fucking 18-2 deficit, 30-15 deficit, also at another point in the first half. Noah Fernandez didn't do much. He shot 1 of 5 from the field. When Simpson was on the court, Rutgers was minus 27. He was 1 of 6. He did hit all 4 of his free throws, though. Simpson's a good free throw shooter. Austin Williams actually had a pretty good game. He provided a spark at certain times. He was fine, you know, made a couple good shots, defended pretty well. One of the few bright spots in the game, him and maybe Griffiths and Oscar Palmquist actually did okay. Barely got in, but hit both of his shots. Missed 1 of his 2 free throws because, of course, just really, really tough game all over the court. And I'll tell you what, and here's something that you can say, and I can see from other teams' perspective who play Rutgers all the time. Really good defense makes the other team look really bad in a lot of areas, and it certainly showed here. And Illinois played elite, absolute elite friggin' defense. They did something they haven't done in the rack in a long time. Rutgers whooped Illinois. The last 3 times Illinois was in the rack, Rutgers beat them. This time they whooped our ass, and it's in no small part to how they played defense, but also how we played offense and how we played defense. That Shannon, as I mentioned, on Illinois, was just unbelievable. What a tremendous player he is. He looked like the superstar that he is. He had 23 points and was awesome all night. On our side, as I wrap up the Rutgers piece here, you know, missing Muwant Magg is starting to feel like a bigger and bigger problem each freaking game he's not here. And we can't rush him back. You know, he had a terrible knee injury in February, so it's only been, what, 9 months at this point? You know, he's going on 10 months. I know sometimes they take a year. I'm hoping he gets back soon. I'm hoping he's ready to play. I guess he's not at this point, but boy, oh boy, we really could use all of his skills, his offensive skills, his defensive skills. You know, he can cover guards. He's bigger than any of our guards now. We really need him back. Anyway, Rutgers better get right quick. They travel down to North Carolina to play Wake Forest on the road on Wednesday evening. So we need to pick up our play here, Rutgers. Let's go, RU. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the New York Rangers. And the Rangers beat the Nashville Predators 4-3 on Saturday with yet another comeback win early in this year's campaign. And I got to tell you, as the calendar turns to December, boy, the Rangers are continuing with good play and with character-building wins. The Rangers here in this game were down to Nashville 2-0 after one period. Later, they were down 3-1, so 2 times they were down 2 goals. Rangers end up scoring the last three goals to beat the Nashville Predators, who is a team, by the way, that beat the Rangers in the fourth game of the season, at which point the Rangers were 2-2. That game early in October was one of the Rangers' worst losses of the year, and it was kind of an inflection point, honestly, for the Rangers. After they were 2-2, I don't know what clicked, but something clicked. The Rangers just kind of took off and haven't looked back since. Basically, since losing that game to go 2-2 in October, the Rangers have been 15-2-1 and have not looked back at that point. 15-2-1 over their last 18 games. And this game was quite a contrast to that previous game. The Rangers showed some fortitude and certainly some improvement over that last, you know, matchup with Nashville. And honestly, being down two goals twice last year, it didn't seem like the Rangers had the fortitude to come back. And one of the things that Laviolette has done this year is stick with the lines. And almost every single game this year, no matter how good or bad they're playing, that he has not mixed up the lines. This game he did. So it was odd to see, as the second period started, line switched up. Panarin was playing with Mika and Laffy to start the second period. And it's rare for Laviolette to make these changes. And in my mind, it's a really good thing. Not that he makes changes, but that he does it rarely. Because when Gallant would constantly mix up the lines, it was like a line soup salad, just all shuffled all the time. When you do it, it doesn't make as big an impression, right? When you consistently have your lines and have your lines, and then maybe one game something gets stale, and then you make a change once in a while, it makes a big difference. There's a stark contrast to someone changing something one time over 10 or 11 games versus 12 times over 10 games, where you're just used to playing with different people and it doesn't mean anything. Like when Laviolette changed all the lines now, the team knows something is wrong. And not only are they more perked up, but I think they take notice and play a little bit differently. I think it's just human tendency, right? When you're used to something, like changing lines all the time, then not much changes. But when you're used to playing with same folks and suddenly something's different, I think it wakes people up. And I think the consistency of that, and making sure that you do play consistently with your line mates and that line changes are rare, I think it's benefited the Rangers. And here it woke the Rangers up. They scored immediately coming out of the gate. I mean, I think it was 30 seconds. It was in the first minute of the second period to make it 2-1. So it paid immediate dividends. Again, Panarin was with Mika and Laffy. They weren't great, but they were fine. You know, they certainly didn't do poorly. Igor Shesterkin in this game, he was okay. He finished really strong, but he seemed to start a bit slow. Again, there weren't any bad goals, but he's had a few instances this year where earlier in the game he's looked worse than the end of the game. I guess if I had to have it one way or the other, that's how I'd want him. We would want him to start strong and then just give up goals at the end. But he did finish very strong, but he also benefited, as did the Rangers, from a bit of puck luck and some very late good defense by the Rangers, along with Igor really improving and making some good saves. So the Rangers bounced back. They ended up coming back and winning 4-3. Nashville did hit a few posts along the way. But the Rangers did hang on, and Igor hung on. A couple quick notes. Lafreniere continues to play well. He looked good again. Nothing exciting to say in this particular game, but he continues to raise his overall game. The Rangers obviously are going to be without Kaapo Kakko for a very long time. I like the speed of Brzezinski. Every time he's called up, I enjoy him. I have to feel like there's someone else besides Brzezinski that could be sent down, because I think speed always helps a team, especially a team like the Rangers that, in my mind, do not seem as fast as some of the other teams, particularly the Devils and a few others of the elite teams. And having Brzezinski out there, it's just like a shot of adrenaline. It's pure speed. I don't think he hurts us defensively. His speed was quite evident on Saturday afternoon, and I hope he finds a way to stick around. Now, obviously, we've had such a great record, and you don't want to take away from that, but you have people on the team like Pitlick and a couple others that you don't know if it's better to have Brzezinski in the lineup or not, and I guess we're going to see that as the season goes on. What else? Adam Fox didn't look great. Quite honestly, he's still looking a little slow after his comeback from his injury. His decision making was okay, but he's not looked like the same Fox in the couple games that he's been back from his injury. So hopefully it's just kind of an injury hangover and he's just playing his way back into game shape. But I need to see more from Adam Fox. He looked really good before his injury. He has not looked very good since, quite honestly. However, the Rangers power play did look good, as it has all season. They scored one goal, and basically, when they really scored two, they scored the second one scored like a half a second after the power play expired. It was almost on the button. The minute it hit zero, the puck went in. They ruled it not a power play goal, but essentially it was. So they put in one. They really put in two. I have to eat my words a little bit about Trocheck, who has really played a strong center position for the Rangers and is leading the Rangers in faceoffs. Not only is he scoring and getting assists and helping on the power play, which I don't think he did much last year. I didn't like his offensive game one bit last year. This year, his offensive game has improved, and he looks like a different offensive player. But more critically, he's winning faceoffs and big faceoffs, and those are the ones that matter. If you go back to listen to any of my podcasts about the Rangers over the last 2 years, I've talked so much about how bad the Rangers were in faceoffs year after year, game after game. I think every one of my Rangers podcasts from last season talked about they have to get better on faceoffs and how critical it was. And finally, it started to take notice. I hear announcers actually talking about faceoffs now. And, oh, you know, now that the Rangers are number one in the league somehow, you know, suddenly faceoffs are important. When the Rangers lose them, they go ignored, right? And maybe a team scores a goal off a faceoff later in the game. They mention it quickly and they move on, but they never come back to it. It's never written about. Now that they're actually good at it, they're starting to write about it, and you can see there's visible evidence in my mind that winning faceoffs leads to success, especially the ones in the offensive and defensive zones, which is exactly what I preached on this podcast over the last couple of years. I mean, you want to win all the faceoffs because you have more control of the puck and more puck possession, but critically, you know, if when you're in your own zone defending a lead late in the game, that defensive zone faceoff is critical. You lose it and you can have one, two passes, bang, it's in the net. You've seen it over and over, right? In the offensive zone, you're trying to come back, you're trying to win, you know, you need to win that faceoff. You lose it and that's it. It's over. The Rangers won one of their games early on the year, and I can't remember. It's eluding me now. They were down, losing by a goal at under a minute left. And there was a couple icings on the other team. The Rangers had the goalie pulled, but we kept winning faceoffs, and the puck never left the zone. Eventually, we banged it in with a few seconds left, won it in overtime, and it would have never happened. Had we lost one of those faceoffs in the last minute or two, they would have cleared it, and we might not have gotten set up again, or they might have scored an empty net goal. But we essentially had possession in that game over a minute, minute and a half. I can't remember if it was Winnipeg. I don't know. It was one of the games, basically. It showed how critical it is to win offensive zone and defensive zone faceoffs, and the Rangers have been doing that spectacularly this year. And it's not just Trocheck, but he is leading the league and leading the Rangers and winning many, many, many crucial faceoffs for the Rangers this year. And I am so happy about it. You can see how much different the team is when you win faceoffs. So I'm really happy with Trocheck, and I never thought I'd say this because I have not been a big fan. I've just not. And now this year, what can you say? I mean, he's everything you could have wanted in a second line center and more. And the faceoffs themselves make up for a lot of it. The Rangers are right back at it. They play the San Jose Sharks on Sunday. I think it's at 6 o'clock Eastern. And they're looking to keep this season rolling. So let's go Rangers, baby. That's it. That's all I got for you today. So thank you for listening to Jersey Guy Sports. Please subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends all about it. I'll be back soon with some more sports talk. Thanks and have a good day.